Hi, this is Kurtwood Smith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, listen.
Ship crashes, astronaut looms, eyes widen, weird grass grabs your leg, astronaut again, fuck that astronaut. It's one-upsmanship, and we're here to talk about one of your favorite games, one of my favorite games this year.
Heterochromia. That means one brown eye, one blue eye. You see a house. Astronaut keychain. Yeah.
Wristwatch. What's that toy? Plush toy.
I'm Michael Swaim. Right. You really need that astronaut figurine. That's the one you really need.
Yeah, I think there's a deep, I have a deep concern that this game's put astronauts back a few years. Just the terror of that astronaut.
Wait. Explain yourself. What the hell does that mean?
Well, I mean, how many times did you stare at that scary ass astronaut?
Do you mean like it's made astronauts more fearful and we won't embrace astronauts in culture as much?
I mean, that's the joke logic that I am employing, yes.
Okay.
I'm afraid. I'm hilariously afraid of that.
Scanned and accepted. We'll get back to you in 6 to 8 weeks.
55 umbra lights spent on that, or whatever the fuck they're called. Hey, we're talking about Returnal today, if you're not getting these jokes. The PS5 exclusive Returnal that was released late April, right?
Yeah, late April. I think that's right. All I know is, and this will factor heavily into my side of the conversation, it snuck in there. It came at a time between time.
I love it already.
Much like the time loop that is the core of the gameplay itself, it is sort of dropped on us in a wasteland phase in gaming, at least for the PS5, where it represented, I think, sort of the first wave of a true PS5 only game. It's from Housemarque, who you may know from Rezogun? Is that the name
Rezogun,
of that thing?
Yeah, that's the game I played by them before. But they've made others, but that's, I think, their most popular.
And this is, I think it's interesting to note, this is a team of artists who are swinging at an exponentially larger bracket than, what am I trying to say? They are traditionally an indie or double A developer. This is their first triple A game.
Yeah, this was a leap forward for them in terms of expectation.
Ambition.
And, ambition. So it's an interesting experiment for PS5 all around, because they're kind of leaning heavily on it, right? It's kind of like, hey, this is the big first release maybe of the year.
Well,
like it might be that and Ratchet and Clank are the two big games this year.
Yeah, Rift Apart is the other big showcase of what the PS5 is capable of. Oh, we'll talk about that in the Rift Apart episode, but they're separated by many months. And I think, of course, we have to acknowledge chip shortages and the global pandemic is a lot of the reason, just like in the land of film and television, a ton of shit was delayed. So we're feeling that now. And I think it's, we rarely mention like what was going on when the game came out, but Returnal was dropped on us at a unique time in the PS5 landscape. There were still a lot of people. There still are a lot of people who want PS5s who can't get them. And yet, yep, despite that intense demand, there was no real reason that you needed a PS5 per se until Returnal. It was the first AAA, like, yep, if you want to play this, you have to have a PS5, period, game. So, yeah, we're looking at it through that context. And can we pass our first checkpoint?
Oh, I think we absolutely must.
All right.
Which there really aren't checkpoints in this game. I mean, there's one checkpoint.
Spaceship crash. Other shot. Yeah. Shot that you remember, yeah, but it's in a different order now. Oh, wait, the cutscene's not always the same? That's kind of cool. Yeah. Starfield. Plant grabs your leg.
Yeah, car falls over. Overpass? What? And now here we are at the speed run.
That's right.
Who should go? You? Should I go? Who should do it?
Last time our guest did the speed run, I really think you should do the speed run because I think you have a greater appreciation for the game.
Okay. Well, so he's playing his hand early, everyone.
Start the infinitely looping clock.
Oh, my God. Okay, Returnal is a roguelite. It's a 3D roguelite that takes place on an alien planet. It follows the adventure torment of Celine Vassos, who is an astronaut, crashes on this planet over and over, trying to figure out how to get off the planet, which then in turn leads her to explore past versions of herself's recordings. And then that becomes a kind of spiral into the actual problem she's facing here, which is debatable what that is. It is a, like I said, it's a roguelite, so you're always restarting from scratch. It was released this year by Housemarque, as we said. It is the first major PS5 exclusive, and it is a third-person shooter, I guess. It's got kind of horror and sci-fi conventions, but it's really more of an action game than anything else. And that's my speed run.
Stop the clock. You did that in a weird order, which I think is appropriate for the game. So well done.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. One of my favorite things about the game is that you're constantly encountering like logs from yourself. You know what I mean?
Right. Like logs from previous runs, presumably, when you died.
Right. That's correct. So now we're going to, unfortunately, die and then be reborn outside of the ship this time. So different crash. That's weird. And that brings us to our rants. And I believe you're the first ranter this time, correct, sir?
Player one, ranting with all the fury of 1,000 crashed ships trapped in a time loop. Because I think this game is sneakily quite bad, Adam.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to save most of my heavy accusations for Game On, because I really think it would be uncouth of me to drop it all on you in logline form. But let's just say this is going to be a bit of a director piece theater of a one-upsmanship, because I have some theses that are well-conceived and thought through and mathematical. And I'm going to drop
gonna be
them
throwing
on you
those theses
and
right
explain,
at me.
Yes, and explain how this game, I think, is overhyped, and in part for the reason that it landed at a time when we're really thirsty for anything, and why it's not, as it doesn't really do honor to the genre in the same way a game like Hades or, shall I say, Enter the Gungeon did.
Oh, get the fuck out of here.
And,
all right, go ahead.
It's really going to make Adam angry, so you're going to want to stick around. This old bear goes apeshit after this. Your
roars
rant,
into
friend,
the river. Wow. Okay. So your rant is a teaser for a larger point.
My rant is literally just the phrase "hot take incoming."
Hot take bad is your take. Okay. Player two, plug it in. So I really, really liked this game quite a bit. In fact, I streamed it and it took me about 24 hours to beat it. The experience of it is, you know what it actually reminds me of? And this is like coincidental, but it reminds me a little bit of Bloodborne. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. It's very dodge centric and it's very dodge into attack centric. It's one of the only other games I can think of that does that. And it's very sort of atmospheric, ambient, but also, it rewards you for taking smart risks. Sometimes it'll leave you no other option than taking smart risks. Like all roguelite, it has sort of you're at the mercy of RNGesus, right? So like sometimes that goes great for you. Like you buy an astronaut with obelites and you get the watch and suddenly you have two extra lives. Or you get that one that allows you to basically make have a shield every time you pick up a resin, which is like, okay, this rules. And then sometimes you get some bullshit and you're like, this sucks. And I hate this weird pyrolancer gun and shit. So like there are runs that just suck. And then there are runs where everything comes together and it feels great. If you don't like that, you probably just don't like roguelites that much. Cause that's just kind of the nature of the beast. My major criticism of the game is twofold. First, the runs themselves are badly designed because they're too long. In order to beat this game, you basically have to have two successful 3 or 4 hour runs. There's not really a way to do it any other way. Like there are 6 stages, but the truth of the matter is you have to get all the way through level 3 and beat at least one boss, the last boss of level 3, to get to a checkpoint. And the checkpoint is between levels 3 and 4. And then you have to kind of do all the stages again and beat at least the final boss once in order to actually beat this game the first time. I tried actually skipping ahead to levels and you just didn't have the right amount of XP and powers to beat anybody or to survive in the 6th level. So like it kind of means you have to have a good 3 hour run, which if you know how roguelites work, especially this one, is asking a lot. It's very frustrating. Now, fortunately for me, in 24 hours, I had 2 or 3 of those. And so it worked out good for me and I really enjoyed it. But I can imagine that like there's somebody who's played this game 100 hours and it never beat it and got very angry with it. There's also some people have the critique that they're basically only 3 levels and they can't or 3 or 4 levels and they basically reskin them. I think that's a valid critique. I understand that. Tom Ryman, when I saw him for the first time after the quarantine, right? So like I hadn't seen the guy in person in like a year. The first thing he says to me is, "Adam, Returnal sucks." So like the first thing he said is that he hated this game. So it definitely evokes strong emotions in people. And I love that. Personally, I really enjoyed it. So the only other aspect that I want to critique of it is I think sometimes a fractured, obscure story is really cool. And this game, I was constantly sort of teetering on the edge of like, ooh, is this all going to add up in a cool way? And I think they ended up settling on a not totally linear or cohesive story because I have not seen a satisfactory explanation of it. And so like it doesn't feel like it totally congeals. It certainly doesn't in an emotional way, which means as a story, it's not effective. Because again, whenever I think about non-linear, non-narrative experiences that work, I think of David Lynch, and you always feel satisfied with the experience of his movies. And I would argue you don't necessarily with Returnal. So that's my rant.
Yeah, spaceship shot, Starfield crash. Game on.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry though, he's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
So the game is on, and...
Yes. You're going to blindside me now. Here's the blindside.
Well, I wanted to scoff loudly many times during your rant, and all I did was cough once, which was involuntary, so don't read into that. But
okay,
you actually are not fanboying out as hard as I thought you would. So maybe we're closer to the same. Like, you granted, I do think... So there's multiple facets to my argument, but we'll knock an easy one out of the way first, which is, are you aware of Risk of Rain 2?
I'm aware of it, but I have not played it.
Okay, watch a gameplay footage of it. Perhaps now will I regale you with my thesis or later at your convenience. But regardless, recognize and appreciate that it's an identical game with an identical loop and even the same artistic style. It is Returnal. Returnal is just Risk of Rain 2. And Risk of Rain 2 was made by a much less funded, tiny little indie company that deserves all the credit, and this is just a $69.99 graphics upgrade for Risk of Rain 2, in my opinion. There are minor differences, but in my opinion, they're negligible. And I noticed that immediately. It held true for the whole game. I was shocked to find out that of only five worlds in a $70 game, for the PS5 that's supposed to impress me. This is one leg of my argument is that this game should be $39.99 or $34.99 for the amount of material you're getting. Because basically, the other leg of my argument is that roguelite and roguelikes, and I do think we should mention that, like, I don't know if you covered this in your speedrun per se, but, like, the nature of these games, right, is... You'd play the exact same sequence over and over, but the map, the level map, is procedurally generated, and therefore it's new every time.
Right.
If you're unfamiliar with roguelikes, that's like what that genre means, what the core of it is. And I would just argue that in a game, in a genre, I would argue that there's a reason that the roguelike genre is indie and that it's inseparable from cheap, low-quality production value, and that actually suits it much better because the core precept of a roguelike game or roguelite game is the infinite nature of the possible permutations. So I actually think Housemarque's core idea, which is, what if we did a roguelike game but with AAA graphics? Well, okay, with AAA graphics, you can only afford a couple dozen rooms, and they can only permute a few ways, and really nothing matters except how much sylphum you get and boost your life bar. That's the only real upgrade that matters. There's like six kinds of guns.
Oh, no, that isn't true. That isn't true. So like, this is game on, so... I need to stop you at certain points. Okay, great. So, like, I do think it's compelling. The argument that roguelikes have to be lower funded so that you can
have
more
room
options.
They don't have to be, but I think making them AAA actually hurts the endeavor.
So, okay. Well, we're going to be on different ends of the spectrum here because, for me, this is my favorite roguelike, even over Hades.
But it's... It's like a kiddie pool roguelike.
I don't really like a lot of the things that roguelikes do. So, like, I kind of liked the fact that this was like a little toned down and sleeker. I thought that made it more interesting and fun. Like, I think every trim they made to a traditional roguelike was an improvement. I can't convince you that that's not that. No, it's not. You know what I mean? Like, I can't argue with that. There's no doubt that, like, games like Hades or like Enter the Gungeon have more variety I think of environments.
Millions of the glaring one to me is millions of possible permutations versus, I would say, Returnal probably has on the order of thousands of possible permutations, and you can feel that difference. Enter the Gungeon, for example, has literally hundreds of guns, and each gun is completely unique and changes the way that you interact with the enemies. Returnal has six or seven, and I think I'm being generous. Yeah. I think it has five.
No, you're not. I think it has six or seven. Okay. That's right.
Well, that's just a huge difference to me. And I felt like in Hades, for example, because I don't want to just build my argument around my favorite game. Favorite storyless game is Enter the Gungeon for sure. Switching to Hades, and I would be interested in your take on this because you might disagree, but it felt subjectively to me, I can't prove this as mathematically, but it felt subjectively to me like it didn't matter that much which parasites I got or didn't get. I usually forewent them. As long as I got enough Silphum and proficiency, not a many of the other systems mattered that much, like would fully determine whether I won or lost the run. Whereas in Hades, there are like four or five different systems, like the mirror and which weapons, and you can upgrade the weapons, and you have runes and boons and all this shit. And it felt like each and every one completely refreshed the game, the combat, and made it a completely different game where my goal was different. I was like, well, now all my power is concentrated in the crystal I shoot, so it's all about regenerating that. Whereas another run, it would be, I would never shoot the crystal. If you know Hades, you know what I'm talking about. I would just zoom in close and punch. And
I think
about it being very based on dodge then attack, that's every roguelike. Like, that is not new. They are... I just think you haven't played enough indie roguelikes.
No. I'm throwing this back at you because you've reduced some things about Returnal that aren't true that maybe suggest you haven't played enough Returnal. So
I beat it.
Okay, but still. Okay. For instance, there are 10 weapons, but each of those weapons has like six or seven like firing mechanic changes. And they're not small changes. Right, they're like, this one has now, it has missiles, or it has a laser beam, or it adds a shield, or like there's all kinds of like different, like, so these guns do have a lot more permutations than you're making it out to be. That's the first thing. The second thing is that while I agree that the mechanics dramatically differ, I think it's easy to play a game like Returnal and get a little conservative and not try some of the weird ideas they have. So, like, for instance, they have this concept like a parasite. The parasite concept is you get a boon, but you also get a negative thing, and you're trying to weigh out, is the negative thing worth it or not, right? And, like, there's a lot of things in Returnal that are sort of, like, gambling-based, where it's, like, risk-reward. Like, is it worth it to take on this potentially bad system thing?
And the answer
in return,
is you can feasibly beat the game just by getting good at dodging, so you don't really need the parasites.
You don't have to. No, you don't have to. That's correct. You don't have to, but there are systems that make those, that tip those things in your favor, right? So, like, you might encounter, for instance, like a boost or whatever, or a buff that, like, when you add a parasite, it adds a resin. You know what I mean? Or, like, there's a lot of different things like that. There's, like, hundreds of different, like, upgrades that do tangibly change what the experience is. A lot of people's reaction to Returnal was kind of early. Like, I suspect that if they'd played it, you know, I don't know, another 20, 30 hours or whatever, they might have found that the game has a little bit more robust experience than we're characterizing it. Now, I don't blame them for not doing it because, to me, the fact that you have to seam those runs together, those 3-hour runs, like, that's a deal breaker for a lot of people. You know, like, I understand that, like, because you shouldn't have to string a run that's that long together.
Sure.
To play a roguelike. No, but that's a huge problem, right? Like, Hades, the longest you ever have to play a run is like, what, 15 minutes? 20 minutes?
Yeah, Enter the Gungeon, you usually... I mean, a winning Enter the Gungeon run will be like 40 minutes max. Yeah.
Right, 40 minutes. It's like 3 hours.
Right. It really is. Well, because you can't just zoom through, you really do need the health upgrades or you can't.
That's the issue. That is the issue that you cannot effectively skip. That is a problem. I do think that they should have had more biomes for the price point. I think that's a conceivable Like, I can concede that. That doesn't super bother me.
And I am lucky enough that at the end of the day, $35, I mean, it still feels hefty. Like, it won't ruin me. But
yeah.
But if the price point were different, I would feel very differently about the game, and that's valid. So if money's no object for you, then disregard that aspect of my argument. But my argument is that roguelike is specifically built to be a scrappy, low asset. Like, it's nowhere near building out a Ghost of Tsushima or a God of War in terms of the art assets and the number of people you need working around the clock to make that world. The whole point of roguelike is you just build puzzle pieces and connect them in random orders. So, of course, there's still unique challenges to the genre, but it's traditionally a low, like, difficulty game to put together. Like, one of the most famous ones of all is the Binding of Isaac, which just looks like stick figures. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why it costs $70. It almost feels like Sony pressured them to do that to be like, this is a real PlayStation 5 game. We need to set a precedent, you know? This is the next generation of gaming.
Well, the price point is definitely an issue that Sony's pushing on people. I mean, I can't do like an audit to figure out whether this thing should have cost that much from a game design point of view. You might be able to. You might have better insight into that.
It's a gut reaction. I just...
Okay.
But you're right. I shouldn't say... Like, again, and in fact, it's funny to have worked now for a bit with all the IGN folks, because even the ones who have worked there for 10 years, you know, knowing everything about video games, even digesting them as artistic artifacts like we do, even reporting on the minutiae of them is nothing like making the game. Ryan McCaffrey or whoever you could name at IGN are still like, yeah, I don't know anything about how they make the games. I bet it's interesting.
That's crazy.
All we know is it's incredibly complex and challenging, and every game is its own challenge, you know. And
that's why I feel
we can all imagine confident. Various facets of it, but we can't speak with definite. You know.
But that's why I feel more confident on this show making those kind of declarations, because we at least make things. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, we at least make movies and stuff. So, like, so I guess my feeling is that, like, it's sounding a little like you're settling into a prescription for what a roguelike can be. And it's not an unfair prescription, because it's the ones that have been successful or beloved have done it the way you described it. What I like about Returnal is that it seems like it's an attempt to try to make this genre not a scrappy indie game and to make it a more mainstream successful thing, which is a pretty heavy bet. And I understand, and I think it's reasonable, that there's a percentage of people who find the difficulty or the repetitiveness or the mechanics of it, you know, less fun than they want. It's not a God of War. I get
for
that.
Me, it feels more like the Yankees effect. It's like, I feel like you took a little plucky genre that has always been historically associated with this indie sensibility, and you said, what if the only thing we brought to the table artistically was we threw our big strong money at the idea? I just feel like, I get, you know, that's easy. It's just easy artistically. And I say that because of the other leg of my thing, which I glossed over but need to repeat. This game is just Risk of Rain 2 with better graphics.
I haven't played Risk of Rain 2. I'm probably going to reject that on the basis of, like, why are you the only person I've heard say that? That seems like it might be a little
bit of a... That's what's sad. No one plays these indie games, these indie roguelikes. They need to play them.
Okay, but that doesn't mean that they copied Risk of Rain 2. You know what I mean? Like I think it's fair to say.
It's been pointed out to me that the games were in development simultaneously. Like, the overlap is such that it's unlikely they copied each other, but I still feel the way I feel.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's wrong. Fine. I'm not arguing with the way you feel. But I do think that it's a little reductive to say, well, there's another game that is the way that I think these games should be, that is the actual progenitor of this, because that might not be true. And also, like, shouldn't we be appreciating the fact that game companies are attempting to make this genre into something it hasn't been before? Like, that's an adventurous move that I think... I'm glad they're trying something like this, and I'm glad that it's at least moderately successful. You know, like I don't think this is like a, you know, the top, like one of the greatest games of all time or anything. Like I'll pass that right away. But it was the most fun thing I played on a PlayStation 5 in 6 months.
But you know? I think and it was like, an especially be, weak 6 months. That's my
yeah,
point.
Yeah. I can't take that away from it. Think that's 100% true.
I think it will prove forgettable in short order.
I mean, I'll tell you this. So this was the first game in a wave of new games. Like May of 2021 had like 8 new games, mm-hmm. right? And like we'd been starving for them since Cyberpunk, which was such a tragedy, right? So like this was the very first new game in that wave. And that wave included the Subnautica Below Zero expansion game, which I had not played, Resident Evil 8, and the Mass Effect remasters, and a console version of Rust, and a couple other things too. I can't remember them all. Also, you know, within a month or two, Ratchet and Clank. So,
but again, that's different than right. Only a couple of those, I would say, like a console port of Rust. Is a thing that some people will very much appreciate, but it's not like here comes the hype train.
It comes, baby. But like,
Tent poles, your summer blockbusters, are like
Mass Effect again, well, right?
I don't know if you can count. I mean,
I think the internet did.
I mean, you know, new like, tent pole games that didn't exist before. That I would still consider that a console port.
I agree. Then it's three. Then it's Ratchet and Clank, and it's Resident Evil 8, and it's
Returnal. Returnal doesn't even rise to that. Did it feel like an event? Yes. Like it's on the same scale?
Well, again, it's
as
not
a Resident Evil Village Ratchet and Clank. Those games both feel truly AAA to me, whereas I don't know what the critique here is. Returnal feels like a game that should cost $35 pretending to be a $70 game.
But then I don't know what the critique here is, because if the critique is, well, it doesn't feel AAA enough, then it's like, well, okay, but like it is a pretty game to play. It does have a unique, very fun vibe to it, I think. Like, and it's a mix of things we've seen, but it's a unique mix, and I feel good about that. I enjoy the kind of arcadey vibe to it sometimes, and I enjoy the horror vibe to it sometimes. So both of those are acceptable to me. If you're saying, yeah, but it doesn't look as cool or as fully funded or like Ratchet
and
Clank.
It's not how cool I wanted it to look. It's the number of rooms, the number of weapons, the number of power-ups that are substantively different from one another.
This is a version that's sort of an exercise in compromise, and I don't mean that in a bad way. Where it's like, okay, we're going to try to make it AAA. The
but
nature
why
of the
restrain,
genre.
Why restrain yourself in every aspect and make a AAA, super polished but reduced in scope roguelike, and then make the run 3 hours?
That was,
it seems
I think the
so
three-hour...
counter. And my argument is that Housemarque doesn't know what they want and are choosing underpinning artistic engines that are at odds with each other. And that's why I think it's not a elegantly put together game.
I think it's at odds.
I think the idea of making a AAA roguelike with only a few levels and two of the levels look the same as the other two levels and it takes 3 hours to complete, so many aspects of that are awkward with other aspects of it. It's like one of those cooking shows where you get a dish and you're like, I mean, I watch too many of these fucking cooking shows, but
clearly,
this is all over the place. You need to learn to edit. You just give me a simple steak and whatever.
I mean, okay, so like on this show, it's not unheard of for us to have darlings that we're defensive over and not willing mm-hmm. to hear reason about. I don't think I've crossed into that territory on Returnal, but I do feel a little defensive over it because I think that you're overweighting these flaws. I don't think anything you said about what the flaws are is untrue other than the degree to which you've characterized it. I do agree that the 3 hour run is at odds. I think that's a mistake. I think they need to come up with a system where they reward the player more substantially for warping, like for actually taking the shortcuts to the other levels. If they did that, I think that it would balance the game out a little bit. Now, your other question was, well, what's the value in sort of reducing this in scope? Well, I mean, that's the reality of money. You know, like I get it. It's like, it's like, look, money and time means that we have to make some sacrifices here. I appreciate the ambition to try to get this genre into this look and see what that is. And I think it was largely successful in that regard. You know, like, I don't think, again, I'm not going to argue that this thing is one of the greatest games of all time. I'm not going to argue that. And I'm also not going to argue with you that part of the reason I love it is because there were no games. 100%. 100%. I completely agree with that. I don't think that makes it bad, though. It might inflate how good I think it is, but I don't think it makes it bad. Can I say that, like, I do think it provides a really unique, interesting loop, gameplay loop and experience that's simultaneously strategic and arcadey, like in a creative way. I think that's unusual for really any game. And so I think the actual, like, shooting loop itself is fun to do. Like, for instance, I got less frustrated at the death loops in this game than I ever got in a From Software game. And I played it almost 24 hours straight.
But From Software games are the epitome of intentionally trying to frustrate you, right?
This game didn't shy from trying to frustrate you. Like, it definitely made it tough.
Yeah. No, I died thousands of times. That's another thing that
right.
I don't...
Right. That's what
I
they wanted
really
it to
like
be.
Frustrating games. Yeah, it's weird.
I understand that. And
that's something I need to introspect about, because there are just one or two games that get under that radar, and I don't know why. Like Enter the Gungeon. Enter the Gungeon, I'm not... I also die thousands of times in that. I just never tire of it. I don't know why.
I got mad at Enter the Gungeon because I hated how fucking childish it was and hard. I hated, like, it's childish and it's hard. Fuck that. Like, just, like, that, the visual aesthetic was, like, blech to me about that game. Although I do appreciate the wide variety of weaponry.
200 guns in that game.
I mean, and awesome. I don't want to shoot some bullshit here, you know?
Well, because another... You don't want to what now?
I don't want to shoot some nonsense bullet shell that shoots little pellets at me like that. You know, like that. I find that obnoxious.
Most of the guns are totally usable. Like, you can complete the game with most of the guns.
Yeah. I mean, I just hate that game. Like, unfortunately, I've tried it five or six times.
Did you get to the boss that's a sentient wall?
I don't think so.
Okay.
That doesn't strike a chord.
I think they also do more interesting thing with, like, every boss in Returnal is essentially a point that shoots dodgeballs at you. And it just, moves in different ways. And
can we do a very
shoots
brief,
different patterns of dodgeballs?
Can we do a very brief check in about this? Okay. So,
are
like,
you
this
okay?
Is gonna, no. This, are you okay right now? So, look, we almost did a one upsmanship on Cuphead. And then we realized we were the only ones who wanted to talk about Cuphead from our group of friends, because we wanted a guest. And then we realized when we were debating it that largely what we were going to talk about Cuphead was how cool the aesthetic of it is, right? That's basically the thing to talk about Cuphead, right? Like, didn't we have that conversation on email thread?
Unless you get into human interest, like, the story behind it is fairly interesting, but that's, like, how it was, you know, brought to fruition. But that's not really what we do on One Upsmanship.
Yes,
so,
I agree. We don't talk
nowhere.
Making of stories.
Right.
So, like, do you think that Cuphead is awesome because of the aesthetic, or do you think the aesthetic is fine and the game is okay?
No. I think the game is just fine. The aesthetic is what it is. Like,
right.
The aesthetic is what makes it worth playing
right.
as an experience, for sure.
I agree with that, but I feel as strongly the opposite way about Enter the Gungeon. So, like, to me,
the fact that the style
is so bad.
Now I see where you're going. I thought you were going to bring Returnal into this, because I am going to. I don't think Returnal rises to that level at all. The world is not that evocative.
But it is evocative in a way that I like. See, like, and so what I'm really giving you is a bias Excel spreadsheet that you can add together, because you have one too. And that is that, like, Enter the Gungeon is a much higher ask for Adam Ganser, because I don't like the aesthetic of it, and I have to sit there and cartoonishly play in it, and it's hard, so I want to give up on it faster. Whereas Returnal, I like its weird, like, slightly creepy vibe. It's not, like, really vibey like Bloodborne.
It's a little Blade Runner 2049-ish vibe.
Yeah, which I fucking love. I love that movie. I love the way it looks, you know? So that's really appealing to me, so I want to be in the world more. And that doesn't sound like it's the most important thing in video games, but in a roguelike, it's really important.
Yes, it's really, really important. And I love classic 2D pixel art, which is why Enter the Gungeon, that's not a hurdle for me.
I tolerate that art for really good games.
Right.
You know, that's how I feel about it. I know
what
that
is a really good pixel art game in your mind?
Like Axiom Verge. Good.
Oh, yeah. Another game with tough bosses that shoot dodgeballs at you.
Axiom Verge. I mean, there's a lot of old 80s 2D games I just like for their own sake, but like the retro done ones, I'm less excited about.
Well, let's talk about the story a little bit, because another thing that I like about Enter the Gungeon that I couldn't help but compare to Returnal was the aspect that the story is, well, I was thinking about Hades as well, the way in which roguelikes can dispense story. Now, Hades got the most shine for this recently because Hades seamlessly blended your roguelike attempts with the idea that chunks of story were a reward in and of themselves, and win or lose, you could access new story chunks. And that was new for the roguelike genre and super innovative, and everyone loved it and everyone talked about how great it was. And I agree. But
I believe we also talked about that and how great
did.
It was.
Yeah. I think Enter the Gungeon did the before that. Enter the Gungeon sort of did what every roguelike did, which is at the very beginning, you get a setup that's one fact about who you are, whatever, some whatever reason you're in a loop. Then you do the loop a million times. One distant day from now, you beat the game and you see a final scene that is just literally the 1-2 punch, the B of your arc. And I would actually argue that if nothing else, that is at least clean. And what it understands is that you're here for the loop, and the loop is by nature repetitive. So you don't really want to waste a lot of time with a bunch of erroneous cutscenes, especially if they don't cohese. So I guess my point is, I think Returnal also falls down in so far as of all the different ways roguelike can dispense story, they picked the weakest way, which is a bunch of random dots scattered throughout that don't connect to each other in any real causal way. Unless you...
Some of them do.
Unless you hold them all in your head at once and look at them and study. My point is, there's never like a 1-2 beat. I mean, other than the very basics, like she reaches White Shadow Signal and then the next thing happens.
Well,
but you
there's
tell me,
one twist.
What do you think?
And there's it's one...
Okay, go ahead.
That's okay. No. So if you're saying that Enter the Gungeon did a better job because of that description, I don't know. I never got the story of that game because I hated it. But like, if that's what you're saying, Returnal does do that. And that beat is that you slowly get the sense that there's a tragedy. You think maybe it's that she lost her mother, or maybe she got cut off. She's like clearly got mental health issues. And then you realize at the end of the game when you get the last piece of cutscene, oh no, it's that her daughter died. Like she, like basically, like she wrecked a car and her daughter was inside and she died.
But am I wrong in thinking that it's a Lajete situation where she died because she crashed the car because she saw an astronaut in the road, which is actually her from the future having returned
as
an astronaut?
That does seem to be what is suggested. Now, my understanding is that if you beat it twice and get the special, item in each level, that you get slightly more of this narrative. I suspect that I won't care. You know what I mean? I suspect that nothing will ever make me
think. And I wasn't saying that Enter the Gungeon's plot is great, because it's essentially plotless. I was saying that they had the good sense to remain plotless. And that's one way you can go. And then I think Hades went another way you can go, which is to brilliantly innovate how to dispense plot via a roguelike. And then I think like Returnal went sort of a middle path that's not a strong... It's like they wanted a plot, but they were too scared for it to fully have a plot.
It's not bothering. Yes, it's tough. God, it's so tough to like compare Hades and Returnal for the reason that like they're just tonally like completely different. You know, like I understand they're the same genre of game, and even like there's overlapping action. So I understand why we're comparing them. But like Hades is like a playful, sort of cool, stylish, like Beverly Hills 90210, but Greek gods. You know what I mean? Like it's very fun, and like you learn cool stuff, and everybody's like a funny representation of a thing you already have an opinion about. And Returnal is like fucking Lost Highway, you know, or like just a completely different kind of story. So it's a little hard for me to say, well, Hades, you know, tried to do a great story and Returnal didn't. I would say Returnal really committed to the idea of a fractured loop-based story, and that commitment made it so obscure that I think most people are not going to enjoy it. My feeling that I had when I watched the ending was like, I don't know. I'm not sure. You know, like, it was okay, and I was like, the ending's not great. You know,
it bothered me that I do think the creature design is pretty neat in some cases, but did it bother you that the final boss is just a big skeleton?
No, I thought all the bosses were weird in one way or the other. Like, to me, the boss that bothered me was the one that was playing the organ.
Yeah.
Because it was like, why would there be that?
Hokey.
That seemed weird compared to everything else. But, like, that third boss fight, you know, the one where you're, like hook-shotting Ixion? Between platforms.
Yes.
Don't ask me to remember a name.
Nemesis.
Don't ask me to remember a single name of anything in return.
Okay.
Like, hook-shotting Celine? Between... Yeah, thank you. thank you. Very helpful. That boss was incredible, I thought. What is it? I have no idea. I liked that the game was very adventurous with what the bosses are and could do. Like, you know, I liked that it felt free to just be like, and here's a weird mushroom that, you know, fights you with lasers and stuff. And there's no fucking logic to it. I didn't hate that. Again, it felt kind of arcadey in a way that I liked.
Yeah, the application of a bullet hell game, which I'm defining in this case as big pellet bullets that move slower than a real bullet does and fill the screen so that you have to look for your openings and dodge. Bringing that into 3D space is an accomplishment and I think a worthy exploration.
Like,
I just think Risk of Rain 2 got there first.
All right, like, let's let that point be stipulated too in the records.
I will not mention it anymore.
It's fine. It's fine. I just can't engage with it. I'm sorry. So, like, I will say that on the notion of creature design, that there's a part of me that suspects if we did like a little bit of a deep dive, there might be some unifying elements to the way the creatures look and why they operate the way they do. Or I guess I kind of hope there are, because so many things do feel like they tie together.
If not, surely some wag on YouTube has made up a plausible story.
Right. Yeah, some creative person that made Lost make sense did this. So maybe that exists. I kind of hope that Housemarque, because I felt like there were times when I was playing this game where I felt like, man, I'm in really good hands. And times where I felt like, man, I don't know if I'm in good hands. Like, I was never totally sure if they were really nailing something awesome or if they were kind of just missing and it wasn't quite. And I still don't know how I feel about that narratively. Like, I don't know.
I know where I land. Yeah, I land on the sourpuss side. Like, for example, I just thought finding your old house that you used to live in the middle of the alien world, strong offer, strong visual.
Strong idea, yeah.
You get the keys to the door. You have a lot of like, okay, what plot beat is this going to be? Yeah. And I just felt like they never served up anything that hit me in the gut the way the setup promised.
It started to feel like they started very strong, and then toward the middle to end, it started to feel like they were stalling. Mm-hmm. And then the ending offered some new insights, but not ones that are like, oh, shit, that's what it was. Like,
right.
You didn't get that vibe. Now, again, in a David Lynch film, which again, that's what I think this is trying to be.
This podcast is clearly becoming a Lynch podcast.
We should be doing one of those. I think that you wouldn't feel like it all hung together, but you'd feel like, wow, it would feel satisfying. And I don't know if this narrative totally achieves that. I didn't experience it that way. Some people on my stream when I streamed were like pissed off at the ending, and then some people were like, oh, that was cool. Off.
I'll also soften my edge and say you're allowed to try non-literal stuff, and I should be like,
yeah,
should be more open-minded and appreciative that they tried it. But it does feel so much about Returnal feels like a pulled punch.
A missed punch, right?
Because they took a swing at cryptic storytelling, but they were too scared to really be cryptic. They took a swing at a plot that has a twist ending, but they didn't really give you a twist ending. Okay, well, go ahead.
I don't think they pulled their punch on the story. I just think they missed. Some things I'm like, yeah, maybe they got a little chicken and conservative. I think that for a AAA game that's a Sony PlayStation game exclusive, this is a pretty fucking risky story. You know, how many games?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's what I mean is I think it's a conservative play overall as an idea for a game, and I don't begrudge them that because it's a dev team trying to make their first foray into AAA games, so why not do a... Like, Returnal as a concept, what if we had a AAA roguelike? It's almost what we would call in the screenwriting biz, high concept, where you're like, you hear a movie and you're like, oh, that's a good hook. That'll sell. Like, you know, Panic Room. What about a Panic Room, but it's real and you really die? And you're like, oh, yeah, that'll sell. That's hooky. I feel like Returnal has that quality. It's high concept. It's sensible. I understand why it got greenlit and why they went for it. And then I actually am surprised how risky the story element is. But at the same time, disappointed that it could have been handled better, cohesed in a more impactful way. But I'll give it to them that I'm like, it's pretty surprising that with this AAA game, they really went for that sort of interpretive. There's a twist, but we don't spell it out for you.
Ever.
Exactly. Ever. Yeah. And even though I didn't earn the quote unquote true ending, I have watched the true ending on YouTube.
Same.
And it still doesn't spell it out for you. Willing to be cryptic. And it's interesting, our last episode was Bloodborne. Do you think that that's a sign of maturity for the medium, that games are willing to dispense story in more cryptic ways?
No, I mean, no. I think that...
Have games always been willing to go there? Because I can't think of a lot of very cryptic... Back in the day, the games were like, here's a big blue screen with text on it that says, you are a hero. The forces of darkness are coming to your land.
Yeah. But not every game was like that. Like, look at games like Myst or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's...
I don't know, dude. Myst still has the two brothers telling you exactly what's going on.
Yeah, but it does it in a... That's true. They didn't forsake the clear narrative altogether. But, like, you know, the cryptic vibe is not a new thing in video games. I think that this game still was, like, basically built around, like, tropes that they felt would be successful. Like, I think your instinct about this being conservative at its core, there's some truth to it. Though I don't think it's conservative for the reasons that you think it is. Like, I think it's conservative because it's like, it's, you know, killing aliens in space, and it's a little bit like Bloodborne.
And roguelikes have been hot lately.
And, like, we're going to tell a non-linear narrative with, like, images that people can brain around, you know? Like, so, like, I think that it's, like, each piece of it feels, like, somewhat adventurous, but in an algorithmically satisfying way, like a Stranger Things kind of way.
Sure. You know what
I mean? Where it's like, I see. You found the sweet cocaine that will work on 80% of gamers.
I'm also realizing how much it owes vibe-wise to Metroid Prime now that I think about it.
Which is one of my favorite games of all time. Like,
it's one of my favorite vibes of all time for sure.
Yeah. Metroid Prime could easily be in my top 20. I don't know where, but somewhere. I love that fucking game. So, like... So maybe that's what it is. It's like, you know, it's stroking the right buttons in my childhood or whatever. And, you know, it came out on April 30th when we'd been in a game deficit. So, you know, all that could be true. I think we've done a pretty fair job exploring its flaws, don't you? Or do you think
I've
there's more?
I've never done, Adam.
Another point? Do you have another one?
No, I covered all my bases. Not as succinctly as you would in a director piece theory, but I think I got them all out.
You are every bit. Your heart beats director piece just like mine does. I don't. There's no better or worse. My thing is, do you think that it's a good experience? Like, do you like when you played it? Did you have fun?
No.
None?
I would have set it down and not finished it, but I wanted to beat it for the sake of the podcast.
I see.
I would have naturally probably quit. I'll tell you when I would have quit, the third biome, because the one thing that felt genuinely exciting to me was transitioning from the first to the second biome and realizing that the second biome was open in design.
Yep.
And then I thought, oh, all five biomes will be fundamentally different in their design. But that is not the case. Only the second one.
Well, the third all one the rest is are really spread out and you're flying all over the place and stuff.
That's true. And one of them's underwater, but that doesn't really change anything.
It changes that. No, it doesn't change that much.
I'll just say that was the moment that I felt my soul move a little bit. And that was the only moment. Was like going from one to two and being like, oh, this is interesting.
So you
that's
you
the biggest emotional response this game got out of me.
Wow, that's colder than... So you're like halfway between how I felt about Psychonauts and Death Stranding.
I think you really have to, this is the last time I'll mention it. I think you have to take into account that I had already spent 40 hours beating Risk of Rain 2. Like, I felt like I'd already played the game with the same vibe and everything.
I mean, clearly that game is interesting because I'd heard the title. Like, nobody that I know is comparing them. Maybe your brain just did that, or maybe you're the genius that's out ahead of everyone with this comparison. I don't know.
I think it's the genius one.
Yeah, I think it's genius. I've been waiting for you to say that.
No, but I've said this about Returnal to several of my coworkers at IGN, and they've all said, no, you're wrong. I don't see it. So I might be the only person who thinks this, but I wish you'd watch a brief gameplay clip of Risk of Rain with the music turned up, and I think you'll see what I'm talking about.
I will do that after this podcast, which will not in any way benefit the listener.
No, but that does.
But it'll benefit me.
You got to understand how that gives like a plucky independent filmmaker type a bitter edge when you perceive, whether correct or not, when you perceive a group to have taken a really great idea by a scrappy team of indie people and just thrown a bunch of money at it and made a game that gets much more recognition. You can see why that bugs me and makes me anti this game, right?
I understand it. And all I can say is...
I'm not saying I'm right. I'm saying you can understand the emotional mechanics.
Oh, yeah. For sure I can. I'm just saying, like, choose the way of light, my friend. You know, that's all I'm saying in response to that. Is choose light, my friend.
I had a limited amount of fun with this game. Okay. It felt really grindy most of the time.
I felt until this podcast and said on my stream a bunch of times, like, I think this is a keeper game. Like, I really, really liked it. So that's interesting how far apart we were on it.
You don't know what I'm going to say.
Well, I knew you were going to hate it. I think when I was playing, I was like, he's not going to like this, because it's punishing. Like, it is punishing and it'll punish you like 2 hours into your run. And that's very frustrating, you know?
And I don't tend to like punishing games, as people who listen to the Bloodborne episode will know.
Yeah.
Except sometimes it just everything is multifactorial, right? It depends if there's other elements to appreciate while you're being punished. And I found that by the time I had seen the third biome 3 or 4 times, I felt nothing but dread when I reset and was like, here goes grinding through the first biome again. set up a nice baseline for my run.
Yeah. There are times that going through that first and the fourth biome is like, ugh. For sure.
You're just stirring the pot. You're just making the stew, the base of the stew.
I only played the Therm biome once. Like, I literally played it once and beat it. I was very lucky.
And then just portaled.
You can't go back to level one until you've beaten the whole game after you beat 3.
Right.
That's the thing, right? So you have to beat the whole game after that.
You haven't gone through again. Okay.
I went to level 3 once when you were over. So we played it a little bit at that point. But I took a break after a while because I was like, there's other games to play and stuff. But I have not deleted it from my actual hard drive because I kind of want to play it again.
Well, I didn't even technically beat it. I just got to the final boss and drained about half his health and died and then watched the ending of the game on YouTube and was like, that's good enough.
That's,
all the parts.
That's when you got to get, like, I can't remember what it's called, the contact beam or the phase beam. Like, there's the Hollow Seeker was my weapon. Mm-hmm.
Mine as well.
They get like a phase beam, like level 3 or whatever, and that fucking gun will waste that boss. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
Some people swear by that the gun that sets up like the laser field or whatever it's called. Like it's very much like
most of the speedrunners who are running Eternal stick with that guy.
I haven't figured out how to use it effectively, but it's like Anarchy in Destiny 2, if anybody hasn't played this game but has played that. It like sets up these like modules that like create a field of electricity. It looks cool. I can't figure out how to use it. Or I'm not going to, I guess. So should we pass our final checkpoint? What do you think?
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry, though. He's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess, the 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again, the First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances, and the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's do it. First person POV, astronaut hands, daughter die, drown, daughter dead, sad. Okay, we're here.
Good. Yeah. By the way, does she have like a weird emotional relationship with her ship?
Well, right? I also thought one of the monsters you encounter represents your mother, or does it represent you because you're the mother to the kid?
That was the reversal, was that, oh, there's a kid and you, and that kid was not you, it was your daughter.
Yeah. Also, did you notice that Celine has two brown eyes when her daughter dies? So did going to space make one of her eyes blue?
I mean, I think you can argue she may never have gone to space. You know what I mean?
Oh, that it's the it's the old Babadook. Like stuff happening in her head through the trauma of the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, Babadook is underappreciated. For sort of
I love Babadook.
It kind of puts a visual language to that trope that has been used a lot since then.
Are you talking about the moment where you see the silhouette of the guy and then his head gets sliced in half? Because that shit is very impactful.
Among other things, yes.
The flashback they keep going to of the actual accident itself is very good.
Yeah, it is.
Did you ever see the Danny Boyle movie Trance, I think it's called?
I have not. I've seen Trainspotting.
About art thievery?
No.
It's a fairly boring movie, but there's one visual in it of a guy where like just half his head is cleanly missing that is really sticks with you. Ooh. Something creepy about just cleanly bisecting a head.
I can't argue with you about your delete this time, but I can undermine you by reminding everyone that you deleted Halo and Grand Theft Auto 5. So I'm going to do that. I'm also going to delete this. I think you convinced me. You convinced me these flaws are kind of, there's no way you can put it on the hard drive with flaws like what you and I are talking about. I just don't see it. I really did enjoy it. I don't care if I enjoyed it because of the quarantine.
Sure.
To me, it's like, hey, thank you then.
It's true. Like providing the experience exists some joy in and of itself. Yeah.
Well, also, like, I'm glad something was the joy I needed in the quarantine, you know, as opposed to nothing. So,
yeah, whatever. I love everybody. Congrats, House Mark. Great game.
So that's the one thing I will say is like,
I'm rooting for the team.
Me too. Me too. Like, I really like this team. I think this is a great, fun game.
I hope they don't listen to this podcast and hear me shitting on their game. But
if they do and they feel bad, please hear at least me saying, we love you. We hope you keep doing it. Like, I really liked a lot of the ideas here for sure.
That's from Adam.
Yeah.
Adam said that.
From Mike is, I hate you and this game sucks. No.
No, see, that was also Adam. He's crafty. He'll try to put words in my mouth. Don't listen to him, House Mark. Plant grabs your leg. Baby crash. Space die. Are we done?
I think so.
Work complete.
Hi, this is Kurtwood Smith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances. Whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death, we all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.